So let's turn then to the book of Esther, Esther chapter 1. Esther chapter 1. We're going to be looking at the first chapter this morning, so let's read it. Esther chapter 1. This is not quite so easy for the congregation to respond. There are some difficult names in this chapter. I would love to hand over some of the difficult verses to you, but let's give our attention to the Word of God as it's read in your hearing. Esther chapter 1. Now, in the days of Ahasuerus, the Ahasuerus who reigned from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces, in those days when King Ahasuerus sat on his royal throne in Susa, the citadel, in the third year of his reign, he gave a feast for all his officials and servants. The army of Persia and Media and the nobles and governors of the provinces were before him, while he showed the riches of his royal glory and the splendor and pomp of his greatness for many days, 180 days. And when these days were completed, the king gave for all the people present in Susa, the citadel, both great and small, a feast lasting for 7 days in the court of the garden of the king's palace. There were white cotton curtains and violet hangings fastened with cords of fine linen and purple to silver rods and marble pillars, and also couches of gold and silver on a mosaic pavement of porphyry, marble, mother of pearl, and precious stones. Drinks were served in golden vessels, vessels of different kinds, and the royal wine was lavished according to the bounty of the king, and drinking was according to this edict: there is no compulsion. For the king had given orders to all the staff of his palace to do as each man desired. Queen Vashti also gave a feast for the women in the palace that belonged to King Ahasuerus. On the 7th day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded Mehuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, and Abagtha, Zethar, and Carcass, the 7 eunuchs who served in the presence of King Ahasuerus, to bring Queen Vashti before the king with her royal crown, in order to show the peoples and the princes her beauty, for she was lovely to look at. But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command delivered by the eunuchs. At this, the king became enraged, and his anger burned within him. Then the king said to the wise men who knew the times, for this was the king's procedure toward all who were versed in law and judgment, the men next to him being Karshina, Sethar, Admatha, Tarshish, Merez, Marsena, and Memucan, the 7 princes of Persia and Media, who saw the king's face and sat first in the kingdom. According to the law, what is to be done with Queen Vashti? Because she has not performed the command of King Ahasuerus delivered by the eunuchs. Then Memucan said in the presence of the king and the officials, not only against the king has Queen Vashti done wrong, but also against all the officials and all the peoples who are in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus. For the queen's behavior will be made known to all women, causing them to look at their husbands with contempt, since they will say, King Ahasuerus commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, and she did not come. This very day the noble women of Persia and Media, who have heard of the queen's behavior, will say the same to all the king's officials, and there will be contempt and wrath in plenty. If it please the king, let a royal order go out from him, and let it be written among the laws of the Persians and the Medes, so that it may not be repealed, that Vashti is never again to come before King Ahasuerus. And let the king give her royal position to another who is better than she. So when the decree made by the king is proclaimed throughout all its kingdom, for it is vast, all women will give honour to their husbands, high and low alike. This advice pleased the king and the princes, and the kings did as Memucan proposed. He sent letters to all the royal provinces, to every province in its own script, and to every people in its own language, that every man be master in his own household and speak according to the language of his people. The word of God. Well, this morning we begin a short little series in our morning worship services in this book of Esther. And without doubt, the book of Esther is one of the most thrilling and captivating stories in all the Bible. As a book, you could say it has it all. It has drama, it has suspense, it has intrigue, it has beautiful women, it has adventure, it even has assassination plots. Someone has described Esther as the sort of book you take with you on your holidays. But as a book of the Bible, it is a little bit unusual, the book of Esther. It's one of only two books named after women in the Bible. The other is Ruth. The two of them named this way after their main characters, Esther and Ruth. But even more unusual than that, Esther is the only book of the Bible that never mentions God. It never mentions God, not even once. There's no reference to worship or faith. There's no prediction of the Messiah. There's no mention of heaven or hell. In short, there's nothing that religious about it on the surface. As someone has said, it is a gripping tale, but you would maybe rather expect to find it in the pages of the Reader's Digest than the Bible. And we should find it quite incredible, shouldn't we? God not mentioned once in this book of Esther. It's 10 chapters long, not a mention of God. And that, friends, is one of the main lessons from the book itself. Though he may seem invisible, though he may seem distant, God is at work. God is at work. We're going to see, though his name is absent from this book, he is present in every scene, in every event, perfectly bringing about his purposes. Matthew Henry puts it well. Though the name of God be not in Esther, the finger of God is there. The finger of God is there, directing every minute event for the bringing about of his people's deliverance. So friends, in this book, the immortal, invisible, all-wise hand of God is working behind the scenes, unmistakably. And how we need the book of Esther at a time like this. Because God is the very same God today as he was in Esther's day. And he is at work in largely the very same way as he was in Esther's day. Invisibly, behind the scenes, directing every minute event. And how we need convinced, we need reminded of this truth over and over again. The book of Esther is a book for the person who doubts the existence of God. The person who questions if there really is a God of love, a God in charge of this world. I wonder if from time to time, many of us, we struggle with this sometimes, with the quietness, the distance of God, the invisibility of God. And we can take comfort in the book of Esther. Or maybe this morning you find yourself broken by life's circumstances. And your life has been crushed, perhaps, in a way that it seems that there's no way in the world that God can make reason or meaning out of it. This book contains a beautiful message for anyone in that position. Because as we'll see in Esther, we have a little orphaned girl, and God places his hand on her, a girl who had lost her mother and father and living in exile in the land of Persia, and we will see the hand of providence at work in her life. So I hope we will learn some unforgettable, relevant, helpful lessons from this book of Esther. This morning we're in the opening chapter. It's something of an introduction to the book. It sets the scene. There's no mention of Esther yet in this chapter. It's all about the king of Esther's day. Esther, as far as we know at this point, is just going about her business, living her ordinary day-to-day life. But the king of Persia, he's a different character altogether. And the opening chapter places our focus firmly on him. And so let's think of this king. We want to think, firstly, the remarkable king. The remarkable king. Looking at verses 1 to 8. Though God's name doesn't feature in the book, the king of Esther's day, his name is all over the book. In the 10 chapters, he's mentioned 195 times. Remarkable. He's a central character in the story. He's introduced in the opening verse of the chapter. Verse 1. Now in the days of Ahasuerus, the Ahasuerus who reigned from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces. Now, some of our Bibles will name him Ahasuerus. That's simply his Persian name. Other Bibles will call him Xerxes, and that was his Greek name. It's the same person, Ahasuerus, Xerxes. And for the sake of consistency, I'm sticking with the name our church Bible uses for him, Ahasuerus. So apologies if you have Xerxes in front of you. Do you understand? They are the same person. They're talking about the same man. He was very powerful, this king. He's the most powerful man on earth at this time. He lives in the land of Susa. If you want a modern day place for that, it's most likely around Iran. As verse 1 tells us, he rules from India to Ethiopia. At this time, the majority of the people in the world live in that corner of the world. He rules all of it. Just imagine one ruler, one leader, holding power over the lands of Egypt and Libya, Israel, Turkey, Iraq, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan, Pakistan. Just think of the authority, the power, the might of Ahasuerus. It's hard to overstate who this man was. Archaeologists have discovered in Susa, they have unearthed inscriptions in which this king refers to himself as the great king, the king of kings, the king of lands occupied by many races, the king of this great earth. It's fair to say Ahasuerus didn't struggle with an inferiority complex. He was a big deal and he knew it. And in verse 3, we're told he throws a party, a great banquet. It's the third year of his reign, and he throws a massive feast. On the face of it, nothing unusual about it. King's banquets were common enough. This banquet, however, was an extravaganza. Listen to its size, its duration. Verses 3 and 4. In the third year of his reign, he gave a feast for all of his officials and servants, the army of Persia and Media, and the nobles and governors of the provinces were before him, while he showed the riches of his royal glory and the splendor and pomp of his greatness for many days, 180 days. Can you believe it? A 180-day banquet. We're talking 6 months here of feasting. And all the VIPs of Persia and Media were there for 6 months, unlimited music, dancing, food, alcohol. And as if this wasn't enough, hard on the heels of that, there was another party. You can pick that up in verse 5. There's another group in verse 5 invited to a second banquet. Verse 5, when these days were completed, the king gave for all the people present in Susa, the citadel, both great and small, a feast lasting for 7 days in the court of the garden of the king's palace. He opens the doors and he lets everyone in this time, from the least to the greatest, for 7 days. It kind of makes the eat-out to help-out scheme look a bit stingy, doesn't it? There's an opportunity now for everyone to come and celebrate. And the commoners, the great unwashed of society, get a tour of the king's palace. This place is unbelievable where he lives. Verses 6 to 8 tell us something of the glory of his household. It must have been mind-boggling. We're meant to gaze wide-eyed in our imagination here. Describes the colors of the curtains, purple, the most expensive material of the day, silver rings, marble pillars, sofas of gold and silver, the floor made of a mosaic of jewels and precious stones. It's so over the top. It's just overwhelming with glory. Drinks weren't served in little plastic disposable cups. No, verse 7, gold vessels, each of them different from each other. Hold nothing back, says the king. Bring out the best wine. Let them have all they want, whatever they want. It's an incredible display of majesty, power, riches. Why does he do it? Is it because he's such a nice, generous, loving king? Well, no. Verse 4 tells us, he showed the riches of his royal glory and the splendor and pomp of his greatness. In other words, it's all about him, isn't it? It's all about his ego. It's all about his greatness. Everyone, come and see. Come and see what I have. Everyone, come and eat and drink. You're going to sing. You're going to play. You're going to spend 6 months toasting me, your great king. He's worshipped really as a god in all of this. It's all about his glory. All about his greatness. He wants people to think he's a big deal. How many people today are pretty much like Ahasuerus, inflated with a sense of pride and self-importance, ego? How this king could have done with the words of Proverbs 16, verse 18 being spoken in his ear, pride goes before destruction. He's quite the remarkable king, but someone was missing. Where's his queen? Where's his queen? Let's look secondly, the red-faced king. Remarkable king. Secondly, the red-faced king. Verses 9 to 22 here. Verse 9, we're told that in another part of the palace, there's another party. Queen Vashti has all the women, and she's throwing them a separate banquet. And then something happens. There's a pivotal moment that changes everything. Verses 10 and 11. On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded the 7 eunuchs who served in his presence to bring his queen, to bring Vashti before everyone, to show the people and the princes her beauty. She was lovely to look at. So inevitably, the party has led to excess, drunkenness. the king decides to show off another of his prizes, the physical beauty of his queen. He orders her to be brought into the banquet for everyone to look at. Here's a drunk man making a parade of his wife, as if she was the prize-winning animal at the show. Not surprisingly, verse 12, she refuses to come. She refuses to come. My, my. Here's great King Ahasuerus, King of Kings, he calls himself, and his wife refuses to join the party. Suddenly he's red-faced. You see, he's almost invincible. His glory is remarkable, but he's not in total control here. People are whispering to each other, nudging each other. We're getting a little hint already. Someone else is in control of this. Verse 12, he's furious. He burns with anger. He summons his cabinet, his advisors. He asks them, what are we going to do here? The queen's response has just baffled him. In verse 16, one of the men speaks up, says, well, she should be sent away. Her defiance, it's going to affect the whole nation, king. Wives all over, they're going to do the same. You can just hear these men muttering and grumbling to themselves, can't you? Oh, my wife, when she hears of this, she is just going to do the exact same. She's already stubborn. Wait till she hears. There's going to be no controlling her now. One of them suggests an irreversible decree be made. Vashti never again be allowed in the presence of the king. Ahasuerus loves the plan. The edict is passed. And that's the story, really, so far. A huge banquet, a drunken king, and a principled wife. And right now, some of us were maybe thinking, what in the world does this have to do with me and my situation? What is the relevance of all of this? Where is Esther? Where's God here? But do remember what we said at the beginning. It may seem otherwise, but God's hand is behind all of this. We get a glimpse of it, don't we, in the advice that's given to the king in verse 19. Verse 19, the end of it. Let the king give her royal position, the queen's position, to another. To another who is better than she. So upon the advice given to the king, guess what happens? A vacancy has opened up for the role of queen. Vashti has left the stage of this great drama. Soon a new queen will enter. God's hand all over it. So a remarkable king, then the red-faced king. But thirdly, let's consider the real king. The real king. We're going to see this in the next few weeks. If you don't know the story of Esther, this is a major spoiler coming in here. It's Esther who will replace Vashti. Esther will become the next queen. Queen Esther is the person that God will use to deliver his people. And you see, over and over in this book, we're getting hints and glimpses and sneak peeks into what's going on behind the scenes. But we don't see any of those purposes yet. And that in itself is a lesson for us. Sometimes we have to wait as we see what God is doing. God is nowhere to be seen in this chapter. But that doesn't mean he's not at work. For sure, Ahasuerus is a remarkable king, but there's another king. Another king, a real king, governing all these events. Proverbs 21, verse 1 puts it, the king's heart is a stream of water in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he will. And that says it beautifully. Here's Ahasuerus, who for over 6 months throws a party to proclaim himself as the king of the world, and yet he is just a channel of water in the hands of the Lord. And God can move the hearts of rulers today whenever he wishes, wherever he wishes. He's the real king. He's the real king. Please don't think God is sitting in heaven today, wringing his hands when it comes to godless rulers making unjust, unwise decisions. Not in the slightest. He's always at work. And that's where the good news shines out in Esther 1. Above Ahasuerus, there's another king. There's another king. Above Ahasuerus, there's another throne. And seated on it is the real king, one named Jesus. In the book of Acts 17, verse 7, Paul and Silas were reported to be saying, "There is another king, one called Jesus." And that's where we get the title of our study this morning. In a way, we're invited in this chapter to compare and contrast Ahasuerus, King Ahasuerus, and King Jesus. King Ahasuerus sat on a throne in Susa, but we have another king, Jesus, who sits on his throne in heaven. King Ahasuerus was the most powerful man on earth, but we have another king, Jesus, who made the heavens and the earth. King Ahasuerus said he would rule wherever the sun sets. We have another king, Jesus, who made the sun, rules over all creation. King Ahasuerus died, and today no one worships him as God. We have another king. King Jesus, who conquered death, and today billions worship him as the true God. King Ahasuerus thought he was a man who became God. We have another king, Jesus, God, who added to himself a human nature. Ahasuerus threw enormous banquets. We have another king, King Jesus, preparing for us a banquet which will make Ahasuerus's pale in comparison. King Ahasuerus summoned his bride to expose her to shame. We have another king, King Jesus, who is summoning his bride, the church, to lavish grace and mercy upon her. King Ahasuerus, his bride, was unwilling, reluctant to come. We have another king. And who would refuse his invitation? Who would refuse to come to him? Have you heard and responded to his call to come to the banquet? If not, then you, like Vashti, are doomed to be banished from his presence forever. Who is your king this morning? To whom is your heart committed? King Ahasuerus, his kingdom came to an end. We have another king. His kingdom has no end. King Ahasuerus declared himself the King of Kings. We have another king, the one and only King of Kings, Jesus Christ. That's how we leave Esther chapter 1 this morning. There's another king, a better king, one called Jesus, one who rules and reigns over all things. Praise God, friends. We have another king. One called Jesus.